Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Hi there.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. 110. I see some blue skies, some white clouds, and some rain on Michigan Avenue. The umbrellas are up and the people are getting soaked, or at least sprinkled upon. We're here until 3 o'clock. Big thoughts and some little ones coming your way. Remember now, tickets are currently on sale for our annual conversation with Teddy Roosevelt at the College of DuPage. It'll be the second Saturday in August. There will be two shows, one at 10, one at 11. That's at the College of DuPage, where we often have these conversations. And tickets just went on sale. The shows always sell out. Teddy Roosevelt's conversations with us are live, unrehearsed, spontaneous. You get to ask questions, too. And they are always as informative as they are uplifting and funny. Roosevelt was a great storyteller, led an extraordinary life. And for him to come back to the Chicago area and talk to me on stage, and you too, will be exceptional. I wanted to talk more about that today, but because of the news from this morning, we won't dwell on it. But do go get the tickets. All the information is at our website if you go to WGNradio.com/events. Go to WGNradio.com/events. All the information you need is there. On a phone line is Congressman Peter Roskam from Illinois, of course. Congressman, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN Radio. Good morning.
John, good to be with you.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm thinking about this morning. Where were you when you heard the news today?
I was in a car on my way to give a speech to the National Association of Home Builders. We had a group in from Illinois, and I was up to greet them. And as I was listening, you know, looking at my phone, getting the details, at first I didn't believe it. I just thought, no, this is not accurate. And then we turned the radio on and got the news locally, and then all of the other news began to cascade in. So I was not out at the baseball practice, but was in Washington at the time.
You don't participate in that event every year?
I don't participate. I go and I cheer my team, and they do a good job. And here's the interesting thing: there's a sweetness to it in that it's a bipartisan event. Both political parties in the House come together and play baseball, and it's a fundraiser for local charities in Washington. And you know, about 10,000 people come out to that game, and it's scheduled for tomorrow evening, and it's gonna the schedule is gonna continue. It's gonna be played tomorrow evening. And I think that's a good thing that it's not being canceled.
Yeah, let's just dwell on that point for a moment. Then I want to ask you a couple of other questions. But I agree with you. If they can do so safely, I think this is not only a moment for all of us to sort of pause and think about who we are and how we represent ourselves, and to remember that Republicans and Democrats alike are all working towards the same goal. They're just coming at it from different directions, and that's okay.
Yeah, that is okay. And I think that there's a, you know, it's unfortunate that it takes an event like this to make us all pause and come together. We were all together a couple of hours ago, nearly the entire House of Representatives, when we were briefed by the Capitol Hill police about the details of the event as they knew them. And then both Speaker and Nancy Pelosi, you know, told the whole group, let's go up, open up the House together. And both of them had things to say directly to the House and to the country. So unfortunately, sometimes it does take events like this to prompt us to reflect. But when these events do come, we're wise to reflect on them.
I want to watch the game now. I don't know if ESPN is planning on broadcasting it or C-SPAN, but
they should be all over this thing. Absolutely.
Somebody should put that on TV.
The amount of interest will go way, way up, ironically, as a result of this.
This is what Speaker Ryan said. He said, we are united. He told you and your colleagues, we are united in shock. We are united in our anguish. An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. He also said he'd seen an image of members of the Democratic congressional baseball team huddled in prayer after learning of the shooting. And he said, every day we come here to test and to challenge each other. We feel so deeply about the things we fight for and the things that we believe in. At times, our emotions can clearly get the best of us. We are all imperfect, but we do not shed our humanity when we enter this chamber, for all the noise and all the fury, we are one family. I'm so sorry it took this, as you just said, Congressman, to remind us of that, because that message has been lost lately.
Yeah, it has. And there's a, it is what it is. The history of the United States is an incredibly tumultuous one. We've seen it in our own lifetimes, and we've seen it in the past centuries as well, where, you know, the level of vitriol and so forth can reach a point where it just spills over and it becomes unacceptable. And I think that now is the time for people of good faith, of all backgrounds and all political persuasions, to say, look, we can clearly talk to one another. We don't have to talk past one another.
Yeah.
And we can try and engage in this in a substantive, constructive way.
And the it in that is, you know, I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but if you were going to then renew your faith in the Congress as a member of Congress, I wonder how you would enact that. How can you be a better congressman? Don't let this shooting be so senseless. How can you better reach across the aisle to get health care improved, or to get a fair and, you know, an intelligent budget passed, et cetera? I wonder how we can go forward, you know?
Yeah, I think the thing to do is to recognize that there's two different levels of approaching this. One is the level of the substantive differences in terms of policy. And those are all serious and consequential, and there's nobody that's making an argument that says don't have certain opinions. But where there have been lines that have been crossed in Congress and all across our public life is a willingness to enter into ad hominem attacks, personal attacks, and so forth, where some of the language really crosses a line. As a result, it debilitates the general debate. So somebody like me, what I try to do and what I hope I'm doing is reflecting a constituency that says, look, let's get about solving these problems and let's speak to one another and recognize that there's plenty of opportunities to work together. And I'll tell you this, here's part of the nature of the challenge. Sometimes the news cycle is so attracted by the conflict that it isn't drawn into where people are working together. So, you know, there's any number of examples, if we had more time, but any number of examples where both sides are working together and producing something together, but it doesn't involve people snarling at one another on television or saying harsh things against one another on the radio. And as a result, it doesn't get the news attention. So I think that there's, you know, it's sort of a sobering time for newsmakers, and it's sort of a sobering time for news coverers.
I think you're right about that. By the way, one last thing. We understand that the shooter is from Illinois, or was from Illinois. Have you heard any more information about the targeting of Republicans per se, or for that matter, Congressman Scalise himself? I know that this guy had actually liked a cartoon that said Scalise should be fired. Scalise was very involved in the health care bill, and this guy didn't like his position on it. It may have just been a coincidence that he happened to hit him, but maybe it was specific. Do you know any more about that?
I don't know. All I know is, you know, what we're all reading, and I don't have any specific insight or experience on that to add to the debate.
Okay. Anything last you want to say? This is a nice conversation, Congressman. I don't know that you and I have visited on the phone since I got back to WGN Radio, but we should talk more.
Yeah, I'd
now
welcome
again.
That. Look, here's one other point that really bears emphasizing. The heroism, and sometimes we throw that phrase around and we call all kinds of people heroes, the heroism on the part of the Capitol Hill police officers who were responding today saved, probably according to eyewitnesses, saved dozens of lives based on them moving towards the attacker.
Yeah.
And it's just a remarkable testament to public service and courage, and we owe them a great deal.
Yes, I understand it. Scalise was shot over by second base. He limps out into the outfield, or crawls into the outfield, to try and gain more distance. And at one point, one of the officers made a break for him, was shot in the process, and still injured, was able to return fire, may have actually delivered the final blow. Imagine what you're called upon to do in a situation like that, and would you have the wherewithal to do it?
Yeah, the capacity to do it, the instinct, the training, the background, and the confidence to do it. It is worthy of so much admiration.
Representative Roskam, nice to talk to you. Let's visit again.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, take care now. Our conversation with Teddy Roosevelt this year, that's a pun based on his... Roosevelt gets credited with saying, speak softly, carry a big stick, but it was actually an African proverb that he borrowed, but he's sort of given authorship of that, at least in America he is. Speak softly, carry a big stick. Our show is called Big Shtick. I shouldn't have to explain it this much, but here I am doing just that. Maybe it wasn't the best title for the show, Steve.
Oh, no, it makes perfect sense after that lengthy explanation.
Thank you, Steve. So here's how you get tickets. You know what? The phone number, there it is at 630. You can get tickets right now by calling 630-942-4000. 632-942-4000. Now, the phone lines are open until 6 this evening. Then the human manned box office closes at 6 o'clock tonight. But you can always get tickets just by going to WGNradio.com/events. WGNradio.com/events. Teddy Roosevelt and I on stage. You get to ask questions too. Saturday, August 12th. Two shows, one in the morning, one at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Our show is presented by AmericanSale.com. We thank them and all of their 9 Chicagoland locations. Anything else to pass along about that, John? No, but do get tickets. Do get tickets. Go get them now, and we'll see you August 12th at COD. This is the Congressman Brooks talking to CNN anchors, his perspective on the shooting today.
I was on deck about to hit batting practice on the third base side of home plate, and I hear a loud bam. And I look around, and behind third base and the third base dugout, which is cinder block, I see a rifle. And I see a little bit of a body, and then I hear another blam, and I realize that there's an active shooter. At the same time, I hear Steve Scalise over near second base scream. He was shot. He's our majority whip. You can imagine all the people in the field scatter. I run around to the first base side of home plate, and we have a batting cage that's got plastic wrapped around it to stop foul balls, and hide behind the plastic. Heard a break in the gunfire and decided to take a chance. Ran from home plate to the first base dugout. There were a number of congressmen and congressional staffers who helped us lying on the ground. One of them was wounded. Myself and another congressman, I don't remember who, applied a tourniquet to try to slow down the bleeding. And then, boom, about 5 feet from my head, I hear another shot. I did not know if it was the second shooter until I saw that it was one of our security detail, and he was ordering us to stay down. Another security detail person was closer to home plate, and there must have been 50 to 100 shots fired. The shooter starts coming around home plate towards we are outside the fence line, and my understanding is that's where our security detail, maybe some of the ones who were wounded, still defending us, took him down. Once we got the all clear that the shooter was down, we ran out to second base for Steve Scalise. He had crawled into the outfield with leaving a trail of blood. I put pressure on his wound in his hip, and Brad Winstrip, a congressman from Ohio, Cincinnati, fortunately he's a physician, he started doing what you need to do to try to minimize the blood loss.
That was Mo Brooks, one of the congressmen who was there on the scene, and that is the eyewitness account. It's 127. Now, Rand Paul, I think, was right, that if it had not been, he said all we had was baseball bats. If it had not been for those officers, and there were just a few of them because there was leadership there. That's my understanding, Steve. Do you read it that way, too?
Yeah, Scalise, because of being the House Majority Leader, has round-the-clock security.
Yeah, and, you know, I think sometimes we sort of scoff at all of the security details that some people get and some people don't, but that's necessary. And this is proof of that. If it had not been for them, as Paul said, it would have been a massacre. I'm amazed in a way that more people weren't shot and killed because he had all of this high power weaponry. There was a few of them, but he, it sounded like, was almost on the field when he opened fire. And if they took cover in the dugout, it would seem to me like that would have made them sitting ducks too. And yet the, you know, loss of life and the number of injured was, by those standards then, minimal. So they're going to play the game Thursday night.
I'm so interested in that. I wasn't kidding when I said to Congressman Roskam, I want to watch the game, and I want to hear the commentary, and I want it to be about Congress and America and baseball all wrapped in one. I don't know exactly how you do that or if anybody will. You haven't heard of that yet, Steve. Is anybody actually going to bring us the game live?
I haven't seen anything like that, no.
I want to watch it maybe, if nothing else, as a way of showing that I'm against what happened and I'm for the people who are in Congress serving us. That sounds kind of silly, doesn't it? But that's kind of where my heart is right now. It's 129. Oliver Stone, for the last couple of years, has been interviewing Vladimir Putin, and he didn't even tell you that. In fact, after the election, after this most recent Russian-hacked election, Oliver Stone has had conversations with Vladimir Putin for a Showtime documentary series that is running this week. And the critics have been just beating poor Oliver Stone up. They said that this whole thing is fawning and the questions are too easy. So Stone goes on with Colbert the other night. You may have heard the clip from Cochrane's show yesterday, or maybe you've just been following it. But it was bizarre and really funny. I'll play a little of that for you in the next half hour, because we will also in the next half hour talk not to Oliver Stone, but his fellow documentarian, the producer of the film. And he has something to say about the Colbert treatment of Oliver Stone. That's all coming up. We were at Northerly Island for a concert this weekend with some friends. Actually, it was a Monday night. Brenda and I were. Yeah, Monday night. And it was really hot, and it was, you know, we walked over there, and it was fun because you're outside, it's Northern Ireland, it's a skyline, you're drinking a beer, it's all good. Elvis Costello. But it was, the show was going on a little longer than it had to. I think he may have had air conditioning up there. We did not where I was sitting. But then, with about, I don't know, 20 minutes left in the show, all of a sudden, this front comes in off the lake, and it was like AC. Boom. It just got cooler. And everybody was like, oh. They were liking the cool air more than they were some of the music we were hearing. And we were big Elvis Costello fans.
Did Elvis like it?
He didn't even comment on that. You know how sometimes there's a ripple that goes up in the crowd and it's lost on the people on the stage or on the floor? I've always been amazed, for instance, at a Bulls game, the crowd seems to enjoy the fact that they shoot T-shirts into the crowd more than they actually do the team on the floor. We were enjoying the music more than we were, or maybe the cool air at that point, more than we were the next song. It's 1:41 now on WGN Radio. So, again, Oliver Stone has been, for the last couple years, interviewing Vladimir Putin. Hooray for him, right? But of all the people, if Vladimir Putin wanted to get the truth out about himself to the world at this critical juncture, who would be the worst person to pick to tell your story? Who would be the last person you would want to put the imprint of truth on what you have to say? I'll go first. Oliver Stone. Oliver Stone is famous and he's brilliant. I don't know what Oliver Stone is, but he's never been tethered completely to the truth when he tackles topics. Now, that's the privilege of a producer, director, or writer. If you're an artist, you get to do that. We know, but Vlad, this doesn't help. I mean, it just muddies the already muddy water about who you are and how we should regard it, particularly since in the interview, and I don't know if you've been watching it on Showtime, but I have. It's very favorable. I was amazed at the length of clips that Oliver Stone and his director have chosen, or producer have chosen, to show. I mean, it's like propaganda. It's there he is saying, no, we must do the right thing for the people. And you see the subtitles underneath, sometimes with dramatic music underneath. The way you would imagine state TV in Russia conveys information to people, they were using a lot of that lock, stock, and barrel without a hint of the irony or the manipulation that's always inherent in that sort of thing. So there they are, just letting Vlad go and telling his story. Now, it's a four-part series, so maybe eventually they'll ask tough questions, but what people have seen so far, and the critics who have seen it at all, say this is way too fawning. This is way too easy. So Oliver Stone goes on with Stephen Colbert a couple of nights ago, and they sit down, and with that as a backdrop, listen to how Stone continues that sort of tone and what Colbert has to say about it.
Do you like Vladimir Putin? After spending 20 hours with the guy, do you trust him? But he's a head of state. He has Russian, he has his own interests of Russia at mind. I respect him for that. I understand why he's doing it. He's a strong nationalist. I think he's devoted to his country. And I'm amazed at his calmness, his as I said, his courtesy. He never really said anything badmouth anybody. And he's been through a lot. And he's been insulted and abused. I didn't sense any kind of abused in the press, in the media. I didn't sense.
As if that fixes it.
I didn't sense any kind of anger about that.
Anything about him negative you found? Anything?
You know,
or does he have your dog in a cage someplace?
If what is wrong with detente with Russia? I just, why would you be against it? And I don't understand this mentality of, maybe it's because you hate Trump. I perhaps can understand.
Hate's a strong word. I don't trust
him. It is a strong word. You don't trust
him. Yeah, I don't
trust him. So therefore, you know, Russia is convenient as an excuse for having
I don't understand
election.
Why our president will never say anything negative about Vladimir Putin, given that Putin is an oppressive leader of his country who suppresses the free press and arrests his enemies. And that is not something that I, as an American or a member of the press, can respect. And I'm surprised that you do respect that.
Well, you know, I've always been for free speech.
Yes, then he doesn't seem like he would be a hero of that.
He's a... Listen, no question. He's a social conservative in that way. He believes that... I don't know why you're laughing, but it's... he believes...
Because it seems like a mild description of his view. That's why they're laughing. It seems like a mild description.
That's not social conservatism. That's repression. Okay, it's 1:45. So what does the producer of that series with Oliver Stone have to say about that? I talked to him just before the show today. Okay, so I talked to the Putin Interviews producer, who along with Oliver Stone has spent the last 2 years talking to Vladimir Putin. It's being broadcast this week on Showtime. Just before the show, I had a chance to visit with him. I think there are two really intriguing and challenging takeaways from this conversation. It runs all of 5 minutes. But tell me if you have the same thoughts I did. We started talking a little bit about, well, the interview and how it was going. And then I asked the producer, Fernando Sulichin, I said, do you think that the Russians hacked the U.S. election?
I don't think that we still have the facts now to judge if they meddle, if they hack the elections. And I think that we may have the facts later, but I think that there is a lot of speculation at this moment, as there was a speculation in the Iraqi war about the chemical weapons. When
weapons of mass destruction, sure. And we never found them. And so you think that it's possible that the notion, the evidence for a Russian hack in this election will be the same as the weapons of mass destruction, the chemical weapons that we all were sure were in Iraq, and yet we never found, right?
I think that there is a big possibility. Don't forget that there was an election lost that people didn't believe in the U.S. that they will lose an election, especially to Donald Trump. In my country, they say when the fox cannot grasp the grapes, it says that the grapes are green. So we need to blame someone for, you know, maybe for Mr. Trump's victory.
Well, I'll tell you what you already know, and that is that absent that evidence, Americans have in fact made up their mind. Our intelligence communities have told us that the Russians hacked the election and that it is almost certain that it came from the top. And so when people watch the movie, I think they want Oliver Stone to be a little more critical, a little more harsh, to use your words. They want him to go after Putin more.
I think that, like Oliver said the other day in an interview, you catch more bees with honey than with vinegar.
And you just described it. If the interviews took place over several months, the way you get Vladimir Putin to continue to be interviewed is to be a little deferential.
And I wouldn't say deferential. I think that, Oliver, in this particular case, we need to have the respect for a head of the state and put ourselves in our place as filmmakers. He's not a rabid journalist. He's not someone that will attack the people just to please the crowd. He's going to make the portrait that he wants.
What is the portrait of Vladimir Putin that Oliver Stone gives us?
First, we can listen to Putin, to his own words. Here you have him, direct to you. That's probably the biggest achievement of the film. Like Oliver says, if we think that Russia is the enemy, let's know the enemy.
Do we also get the sense that this is a tyrant? This is somebody who jails his critics? This is somebody who rules with an iron fist?
Not really. Not really. And those are, again, you know, like assumptions based not merely on fact. Sometimes we believe him. Sometimes we may not believe him. But it's very important for democracy to have the other point of view.
That's interesting, especially at this point in time. That's quite a challenge for us, and maybe we've lost our sense of that. We are extraordinarily critical. You saw the Stephen Colbert interview with Oliver Stone, right?
Yeah, but that's, listen, let's put it this way. This is a guy which is a comedian who, you understand, who is talking like that with no facts about a head of the state. I don't go to Second City in Chicago, which I love, a city that I love, and, you know, I try to be uber critical without facts about comedy techniques. Oliver is a film director, you know, and we need to respect a point of view that we may like or we may not like of a head of the state. Let's not talk about things that we don't know.
Colbert's more than a comedian. I don't mean to spend a lot of time on this. It's not that important to me, but the audience was reacting. Colbert was feeding off the audience, and the audience, you could tell, wasn't buying what Oliver Stone was selling, where Stone was, they believed, being a little too deferential, even in the interview. They hadn't seen the movie Interview, but the fact that he was so considerate to the Putin story, the audience was groaning and then laughing.
What do they know? What is the intellectual level of these people? What is the level of information, you know? Like, you understand? What is the level of education of these people? They're there to laugh. This is a very serious interview that we did. Yeah. You know, this is a portrait. It's not just to make fun of it. That's an easy shot.
Maybe Oliver Stone shouldn't have gone on with Colbert. I would have predicted that it would have gone that way. I mean,
but we're not afraid of anything. We didn't commit a crime. You know, we just interview a very controversial, at this moment, head of the state, and we presented his point of view.
I think that, so the two things, again, that's the producer of the Putin conversations. His name is Fernando Silichin, and he is the producer with, I guess, Oliver Stone. Oliver Stone was the principal interviewer, so I'm sure he had a lot to do with how that thing played out. And that's airing this week on Showtime. I had no idea this was coming. And then all of a sudden there was this media blitz, and there was some real pushback because the thing doesn't challenge Putin enough, doesn't call him on the carpet, doesn't disagree and fight with him. And the two takeaways for me were, number one, it doesn't sound like, I don't know if they knew or cared that they were going to get a lot of criticism for it, but their at least point today is, let's hear the guy. If he's the enemy, let's at least hear it. Just for the record, let Putin talk, say his piece, and we'll know what his position on it is. Doesn't make him right, but why do we have to shoot the messenger who was able to elicit this information? What, are you going to convince him that he's a tyrant or he's a murderer? At one point, Oliver Stone said to Stephen Colbert the other night, Stone said, did he murder someone? I wouldn't even know how to ask him that question. You also got the feeling that if he goes down that path, Putin gets ticked and the interview's over and Showtime loses their miniseries. Whatever. The other interesting point, I think, is that he is suggesting to you and me that just as certain as we were that there were weapons of mass destruction, so too are we certain that there was a hack, and who knows, maybe there wasn't. I think that's very intriguing, because I was sure that there were WMD. I knew there. Colin Powell told me there were WMD. There were no WMD. What if there was no Russian hack? What if there was no interference? Well, intelligence communities have told the media that have told us that there are, but I actually haven't seen the reports. I really don't know what I'm talking about on a firsthand basis. But people I trust say that the Russians interfered with the election, had something to do with Hillary's email. but I'm not real sure about that.
Well, we know there was a hack.
How do we know that?
Because of all the dumped emails.
Oh, you mean because
Democrats' emails that were dumped and released, so there was a hack.
Yeah. So now I guess the point I'm still just wondering about out loud, Steve, is how do we know that that was the Russians? How do we know that that was Vladimir Putin? And this guy is just cautioning us to not jump to any conclusions.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Thank you, Steve.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. It's 208. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Today was the first day you were able to buy tickets to our Teddy Roosevelt show, so I'm just peppering our show with that reminder. The show usually sells out. You want to get a seat, certainly a good seat. You want to call now, and the phone number is 630-942-4000. I'll take the stage with the 26th president. He spoke softly. He carried a big stick, Teddy Roosevelt. That show will be at the College of DuPage, a live, spontaneous, unrehearsed conversation. You get to ask questions, too. We talk about his life then and events, and we certainly ask him about current events as well. Saturday, August 12th, COD. Tickets on sale now. Call 630-942-4000 or visit WGNradio.com/events. Thank you, American Sale, for being our sponsor. It's 208. Our attention continues to focus not only on Washington, D.C., but the unfortunate connection to Illinois and Belleville specifically. On a phone line, Congressman Mike Quigley joins us. Congressman, welcome to the show. How are you this afternoon?
Thanks for having me on. Obviously, a very rough, bad day in Washington, D.C.
Where were you when you got the word? You weren't at the practice, right?
No, I was literally leaving my office to get on my bike and go to a meeting on the Hill. And a Capitol Police officer expressed warnings and I wasn't sure if it was okay to go out and suggested I put my congressional pin inside out.
That was your first word, first warning, huh?
Yeah, I've just gotten little blurbs in the news as I was walking out the door, and she informed me in greater detail of what had happened. So it was quite a shock for all of us, obviously, and most importantly, our thoughts are with those who were shot. Very concerned because I'm now seeing news that my colleague is out of surgery but in critical condition. Sort of gotten the impression that that he had stabilized. So our thoughts are with the congressman and his family right now.
Yeah, no kidding. Did you hear from family right away then? I suppose just on a very personal level, you must have all of a sudden
sure.
wanted to connect with the people that you're close to too, huh?
Well, as I got to my meeting several blocks from the Hill, my dad's ID came up on a call, so I suspect that's what happens. I remember we had a incident here on the Hill several years ago, right after the Naval Yard shooting, and there were shots fired, and a woman had crashed part of the gates, and she was killed. I went into my staffers and told them all, and the interns, call your family. So it's a day to think about that. It's a day to think about, security and the larger issues. Folks have said, do you have security routinely? Well, here in the Hill, in our offices we do, but it's just not practical. I mean, Mr. Scalise is third-ranking Republican, so he had a detail with him, and thank God he did, because this would have been beyond a tragedy. This would have been a massacre. The officers were right there, and I'm hearing that they were heroic in their efforts to bring this perpetrator down. But there are 535 members. There are hundreds of events on and off the Hill. There's just no practical way to even have the kind of protection that Representative Scalise had there today on a broad basis.
Well, I was thinking along those lines myself this morning, and I thought, well, if the members of Congress are in committee, if they're on the floor, if they're at a maybe hotel banquet and they're at a convention, Usually those are fairly protected places, and you've got to go through screening. This was described as a soft target in that you don't have those precautions. And I wondered, how often do you all get together, maybe three dozen of you, in one location where the public could walk right up and have this easy access? And I concluded to myself, Congressman, maybe incorrectly, that it was exceptional, that this does not happen that often, that an average citizen could get that close to that many of you.
Right. Well, it wasn't that long ago. It was months ago that someone made it through the magnetometers coming into the visitor center at the Capitol, and he was taken down by police. I had two tours of people, constituents nearby, who later told me, a woman said that her child asked her, "Mommy, are we going to die?" So the threats are here. When I see school groups here, sometimes on the East Capitol steps, I hear some of the students say, "Why do those men have machine guns?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a dangerous world, unfortunately. It's appropriate, I think, today to remember in 1998, two Capitol police officers.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. Yeah.
Killed right on the East Capitol steps, just inside, literally a gunfight inside the Capitol. So I put this into some sort of perspective here. There are threats here. It is important to protect because we're protecting the democratic process. But I'm also reminded that when we think about gun safety and issues like this violence, in my home city, I suspect that the number one fear Chicago school kids have is getting shot. So it's pervasive. It's a real tragedy today. We're going to try to address this here in terms of the security issues. But the most important thing today is our extraordinary thoughts and prayers with those who are victims, and particularly, you know, as we're hearing, my colleague is in critical condition.
I appreciate the update on that. I'll let you get back to your staff, family, friends, and colleagues. Thanks for joining us, Congressman.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay, so that's the first of a couple of conversations we'll have in the remaining minutes with members of our congressional delegation. Mike Quigley, the Democrat from the 5th, joining us from Washington here on WGN. I don't know what the status of it is by state, but so help me, Steve, when I was broadcasting every day from Minnesota, seemed like we followed Wisconsin more. And one of those two states was debating whether or not you should be able to bring a gun into the chambers of the state houses. You should be able to bring your concealed carry or your open carry weapon into the Minnesota or Wisconsin state house and watch the debate there. I've always thought that was a really, really, really bad idea. And I'm just wondering out loud if you happen to know what the status for Wisconsin or Illinois is. I can't imagine they let you bring your guns into
not in Illinois
to the Capitol.
No,
and it sounds bizarre to even suggest, but so help me, that has been debated in the last few years in at least those two states, as I recall. It's 216. Okay, so there is that.
I'm looking at a story here from just this March. Bill would allow carrying concealed guns without permits in that's in Wisconsin. I'm
yeah, well,
sorry.
No, but that's it.
That's not in the legislative. That's just in the state.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I jumped the gun there.
Yeah, no kidding.
I did not mean that.
Notice how anxious I am for a little validation here, because it sounds bizarre, and it felt bizarre to me then. And I don't know what the status is, but I will stand on this ground that at least has been an open debate. Which side carried the day, I don't recall. Dennis, this is John. You're on WGN. What did you want to say?
John, you know, an automobile can be used as a weapon. Okay? We all know that. People get killed by automobiles a lot. And an automobile, when it's first built, it gets registered. First buyer has to register it. He has to license it. He has to get a driver. He has to have a driver's license. And he has to have liability insurance. I think we should treat guns the same way. From the time they are built to the time they are destroyed, they ought to be registered, they ought to be licensed, and the people ought to have to pass courses in order to use them for gun safety, just like car safety.
Oh, I thought you were going to suggest they also should buy insurance, too, so that if something bad happens as a result, there'd be some insurance. Of course, the bad guys aren't going to do all of that anyway. I mean, that's the age-old argument, isn't it?
Well, then why sell the guns to them?
I'm interested in this conversation. I'm less interested in it today. I appreciate your call. I just don't have the time for all of that here, Dennis, because I think we've heard some of those conversations and we end up talking ourselves into corners. Times like this remind us that we do need to resolve that. You know, but some people will today conclude, well, if all the members of the Congress had weapons, then they would have been able to return fire and fewer people would have been injured. And other people will say, we've got to keep the guns out of hands of crazy people. And this guy flagged himself as at least a very angry and maybe unstable person for some time. Dennis, thanks for the call. Also on a phone line right now, we reached out to, a congressman from the 6th Congressional District. It's actually the 8th. Raja Krishnamurthy joins us now from, Washington, D.C. I presume that's where you are, Congressman?
Good afternoon, John. Yes, thank you.
You're in D.C. as well. I've been asking various colleagues of yours representing Illinois, where were they and how did they hear the news this morning? What was your connection to the story?
Well, I got a phone call very early. It's funny. I just left the gym, and I was on my way to I'm a member of the bipartisan a group called the Bipartisan Working Group. And ironically, on my way there, I got the phone call saying that, Congressman Scalise had been shot as well as others.
Have you heard any information about his status? We have heard conflicting reports. Earlier today, it sounded like he was stable, but one of your colleagues told us moments ago that he hears it's been upgraded to critical, I believe was the condition that he said.
I don't know, John. I do. I heard from the speaker earlier today that he thought the prognosis was good, but I don't know what has happened in the intervening time.
Are you planning on going to the baseball game then? I understand that's still going to be on for Thursday night.
Yes, I plan to drop by. You know, I do think that everybody in your audience I hope that they can keep the victims of this shooting in their thoughts and prayers today. Obviously, Congressman Scalise is now dealing with his wounds. There are a couple of Capitol Police officers who were also shot, an aide as well as a former aide to a member of Congress. And I understand that the former aide is struggling for his life. He's fighting for his life right now. He's going into yet another surgery. So today, I hope that we can all keep them and their families in our thoughts and prayers.
We are lucky that this wasn't worse than it was, aren't we? Lucky's not
the
right
word. We're very lucky. Yeah. Look, the Capitol Police, and for that matter, all of law enforcement deserves our gratitude today. They put their lives on the line this morning to save the people who were on the field, and without them, many lives would have been lost. I don't know if you heard, but something like 50 to 100 rounds were shot off by the perpetrator, and it's a miracle that lives weren't lost instantaneously at that time.
So, how has life in Washington D.C. changed then? Were committee hearings held today? Were you working as a congressman today?
So votes were canceled, and committee hearings have resumed for the afternoon. But votes were canceled. Instead, we had two special sessions. One was a security briefing at which we learned some more details about the actual shooting incident. And then the other was a session basically to come together and remember, what happened today. And, quite frankly, there was a call for the rhetoric to simmer down on all sides. And I think that was an entirely appropriate, call to action, so to speak. And I think today we should obviously remember the victims in our thoughts and prayers and hope that they pull through and wish them a speedy recovery. But tomorrow, I hope that we draw some lessons from this, including that, you know, we have to remember first and foremost that we're all Americans. And you know, we have to treat each other with respect and dignity and civility, and we can disagree without being disagreeable. And I think that is hopefully what we put into practice, you know, as soon as possible.
Well, this isn't about Donald Trump, but I'll just start there because he's the president, and from the president on down to a talk show host in Chicago, I think you're right. It's been a very contentious time. We all have our positions, and the rhetoric and the sort of behavior is, I think, disappointing all of us at every level every day. And there's no room for this. And by the way, I trust you would agree that if a crazy person does something like this or an angry person does something like this, that's on them. That's their action. But we don't need to give them any more reason to behave that way. Stake out your principles, but let's not do anything to drive those on the margins to some sort of violent act.
That's absolutely correct. I agree 100% with what you said, John. And, you know, the one thing is that I've been a congressman for 6 months now. You know, I was elected in November. But one thing that you notice very quickly in Washington, D.C., and perhaps for that matter in other places as well, is that, people are they get attention for conflict and for, you know, using very tough rhetoric on each other. So, you know, as I heard the other day, you know, sometimes the media doesn't really like to cover hugs and handshakes. Instead, they like hand grenades. And, you know, that's what drives some people to, really go after each other in vitriolic terms. And, you know, that just can't be the way forward. There's just too much important stuff that we got to do in a bipartisan way, whether it's, you know, healthcare or infrastructure anything else that really matters to working families.
Yeah, I would hope that that's the takeaway. Too bad it takes this. But so if you're in another committee meeting tomorrow or if there's a vote coming up, use this as a reason to stop all the contentiousness, compromise, get stuff done, you know?
Right. And that was actually, I think, the sentiment that came out of the sessions this morning, but also, you know, like I said, we had this bipartisan working group meeting. I co-founded something called the Middle Class Jobs Caucus with a Republican member, and that's what we try to put into practice as much as possible. Let's try to find the places where we can agree and start from there, as opposed to find the places where we disagree and just kind of hurl insults at each other. And the idea is that if you can start from the places where we might agree, who knows, maybe we can build a little bit of trust and maybe a relationship and use that to then tackle some of the more, you know, some of the more challenging issues. So that's what I'm hoping, and that's what I intend to put in practice as much as I possibly can.
Good luck to you, Raj. Let's visit again. I haven't met you in studio yet. You've jumped on with us a few times, sometimes for less serious occasions than this, but I'd love to meet you in studio sometime too.
Absolutely, John. Thank you for bringing attention to what happened today. And hopefully we use this as a, you know, obviously I hope that we all can keep those victims in our thoughts and prayers and at the same time use it as a teachable moment.
Raja Krishnamurthy is a representative from the 8th Congressional District, a Democrat here in Illinois. John Williams here. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. As you were doing the news and I was saying, gee, it's funny, it's not so bad downtown. It got bad downtown. It's not raining yet, but we just had a bolt of lightning crash.
Yeah, it won't start really raining until about 3:58 when I leave to go catch my train, 2:58.
No, yeah, well, it's 2:41.
Right.
But it was one of those instances where here comes the dark line. It was just a really severe line of dark clouds rolling from the south to the north into the downtown area.
It's the Midwestern drama. I love the good thunderstorm coming through once in a while.
I'm bringing the microphone up from outside, thinking we might catch one of those thunderbolts or lightning cracks. But if you're going through something like we heard in the news earlier, you know, if you got 60-mile-an-hour winds and hail hitting you, feel free to give me a call. 312-981-7200. I'm a sucker for that sort of thing. Hey, listen, you did the story about what happened with the Turkish security detail.
Yes, yes. Can
you, this has been sort of a pet topic of ours because you were so appalled at what we saw. And then I think because of that, a lot of us went back on this show, listeners and staff alike, and looked at it. And it really was terrible when the president of Turkey was in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago. His security detail launched out at protesters and beat and kicked and smacked them and then got in their vehicles, drove away with impunity.
It came on a day, I think, when there was a big Trump scandal story or something, and so sort of overshadowed it. But these security guards, if you will, wearing Turkish identification, not only kicked in the head American protesters or protesters on American soil, but also pushed aside Washington, D.C. police. So they charged past police and just pummeled people who were exercising their constitutional rights.
And the mystery to me was that the police didn't seem to do much about it. Maybe they couldn't, but I was surprised that they got away with that.
The police sometimes tried to stop them and they pushed through them. And they said at the time there'd be an investigation. There wasn't quite the outcry that I think a lot of people were expecting. Now there are two people who have been arrested, I think one in New Jersey. But, you know, they were the president's security detail, Erdogan's. And so a lot of them just left and went home to Turkey with him.
Okay, but you're saying two of them were still in the United States?
Well, two people have been arrested in the United States in connection with this. So I don't think they all probably left. Or I don't know who these two were, but they were in connection to that beating.
They were the dumb ones, because I would have got out of Dodge. I would not have stuck around the United States. I hear the wind now buffeting our outside microphone. As the storm starts to roll north and into the downtown area of Chicago.
Looks like it's raining there now?
Yep, just now starting. Just now starting. We need the rain. We just don't need it all at once.
No.
245. Have you gone to WGNradio.com/events to get your tickets to our Teddy Roosevelt show? TR's in town. Here's how you get tickets. Go to WGNradio.com/events or call this number. We are, for the first time today, giving you the website and the phone number to call. Teddy Roosevelt and I on stage at the College of DuPage. That'll be Saturday, August 12th. Saturday, August 12th. Come see us. We need this show right now, and I'm sure we will in August, too. Call 630-942-4000. That's 630-942-4000. Hey, Kerry, it's John. You're on WGN Radio. What's going on?
Hey, John. King John, I should say.
And I'm not the king yet. The paperwork is tied up downtown. It hasn't gone through yet.
Please press it through quickly, because we need that. I just give you a weather update from Sycamore, Illinois. And it's been the weirdest thing. It was sunny, and then it gets really like green skies, and then it gets sunny, and then the wind kicks up and stops, but no rain. But whatever this is, it's coming probably towards you guys. So be ready for it, Bryce. And I actually want rain, believe it or not, because we just finished a landscaping project, and I'm too lazy to go out and water, so I'm hoping it rains.
Yeah.
It's coming your way. It's weird. It's weird stuff, but it's coming your way.
That's exactly what's happening right now, too. It looks like, oh, wow, all hell's going to break loose. Then it kind of doesn't. So maybe some folks are going to get it, some not. Literally, has it rained hard where you specifically are, Kerry?
It has not rained. It has not rained at all. And I was watching the radar on, this morning I was watching WGN Channel 9, and there were cells like in Rockford, which is, 20 miles from me, if even that, and it's supposed to come through. We have not gotten any rain whatsoever, just weird wind, weird skies, weird, but not a drop of water today.
Good luck to you. Yeah, let me know if anything else happens, Kerry.
Thanks, King.
That's all right. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. I do not claim that title. I like to say when I get to be king someday, but frankly, the paperwork, I keep missing the thunderbolts. I want to broadcast live a lightning bolt downtown, but if you see the lightning bolt and then you hurry up and turn up the outside microphone, you've pretty much missed it. I want to be so quick that when a lightning bolt hits, I'm able to turn the outside microphone up and capture it in real time.
Well, I'm happy we're going to be here to watch you practice.
Do you remember the time that we had the snow?
The thunder snow.
The thunder snow.
Yeah.
And Jim Cantore, was it Jim Cantore that was standing out on Michigan Avenue?
Yep, over by the river.
And he was saying, it's really been snowing hard here in Chicago. And just then, kablam! I don't remember if he jumped, but you did if you were watching it live. It was the most spectacular bolt of lightning and crash of thunder you ever heard. in a blizzard, downtown Chicago. Strangest thing. It's 2:47. There was, oh yeah, did you, are you familiar with this saying, Steve? In the Cochran promo that we heard a minute ago, somebody said, don't let perfect be the enemy of progress.
Yeah, that was Mayor Emanuel.
Well, but the saying is, don't let perfect be the enemy of good, right? But I suppose either way it works.
I've really never heard of either one.
I Googled it, yeah, because only recently did I hear, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Think about that. Isn't that wise? And don't you want to keep that in your back pocket? That's a good saying to remember. Don't let enemy be the good of perfect. And when I was talking to somebody recently, you know that goofy congressman we had in the studio the other day who was a one-termer until he was convicted of purchasing cocaine, and then he was no longer in the Congress, and he wrote a book. It's called Democrazy, and he was a really nice guy. Anyway, there was a sentence in his book that I wrote down as a famous saying, and turns out it's a proverb that people may have heard before as well. He was talking about how if you are a congressman and you want to maybe halt what you feel is excessive spending, you'll say, hey, we've got to stop that bill. It's $50 million, and we don't need to be spending $50 million on that. And then his colleagues would turn to him and say, dude, it's a $1 trillion budget. A $50 million appropriation usually represents about $1 million of spending, say. So we're going to save $1 million if you're successful here. What's the point? It's billions and billions. It's trillions of dollars we're talking about. Why are you fussing about $1 million? And then he said the following. Ready to write this down with a number two pencil?
I've got it.
No raindrop thinks it's responsible for the flood. Oh, that's good.
You could have just stopped after thinks.
Hey, Violetta, do you know that no raindrop thinks it's responsible for the flood?
That makes sense. It's hard to flood with one raindrop.
Okay, I don't think I'm getting through to you all the way I wanted to. I wanted this to be dramatic and life-changing.
No raindrop thinks
it's responsible for the flood. You think that's better?
Well, I don't think raindrops think. I'm having a hard time with that part.
Okay, you guys.
I think it's the straw that broke the camel's back. That's the general.
Well, it's a little bit like that. Let me run that by Steve. Thank you, Violetta. Hey, Steve, no straw thinks it broke the camel's back.
Right, again, because no straw thinks.
Right. So maybe that's the problem.
He's small-brained. I don't know.
It's the raindrop that caused. It's the last raindrop that caused. I don't think I need to fix this one.
No,
I think it's
like
a fine saying
like
the way it is.
No raindrop thinks it caused the flood.
Hey, listen, Elif, do you have the famous saying, the proverb from our conversation with the producer of the talking to Putin? The Putin conversations?
I do.
Okay, so
are
here,
you ready?
This is another famous saying. This is a proverb in, I believe, Spain. Hit it.
In my country, they say, when the fox cannot grasp the grapes, it says that the grapes are green.
How about that?
Like wait, I didn't understand that.
Symbolism.
It's like
symbolism.
The old saying, when the grapes. Would you play that again for us, Elif? Because I'll be honest with you, Violetta, I don't know what the heck he's talking about either here.
In my country, they say, when the fox cannot grasp the grapes, it says that the grapes are green.
Maybe as in green money is green. It's
no,
hard
no, saying, it means they're not cooked yet, so you shouldn't be grabbing for the grapes.
They're saying if you can't reach them, you're like, you don't want those anyway.
Oh.
Right?
No, I think it's that they're not ready yet. They're not ripe yet.
I think he's making an excuse. If you can't reach them, you're saying, we don't want those anyway. They're not ready.
I like your interpretation, John.
That it's that they're not ripe yet.
He's your direct report.
However, there are green grapes that are ripe, too.
It's so time to go.
Spring is here, and that means rain. In fact, it's raining really hard down. Now the rain has come to downtown Chicago. This is John Williams. Speaking of which, we did find the famous Jim Cantore Weather Channel Thunder Snow live broadcast.
Bus Minneapolis cars are listen to that!
They're standing there in the snowstorm, and all of a sudden there's this huge flash of light, and then a second later, ka and pow. Susie just wanted to remind us or at least chime in on the interpretation of the proverb. Hey, Susie, this is John. You're on the air. What did you want to say?
Hi, John. Thanks. And I'm so glad you're back on radio in Chicago. I'm an elementary school librarian, and that's a famous fable from Aesop about a fox that goes goes through all these hardships to try to get at the grapes. And finally, he's like, I don't want them anyway because they're probably green.
Oh.
So it's just, you know, why bother? Because I'm not going to want them anyway. So Steve's interpretation was correct.
Steve has just left the newsroom seat. Judy is in there now. If I think of it, I'll pass that along to him, but I might neglect to do so.
Yeah, let's
not
tell him he was right.
Susie, thanks for the phone call.
You're welcome, John. Thanks.
When the folks cannot grasp the grapes, it says that the grapes are green.
It's 2:57. Ro and Anna next. I want to know... Let's just begin the program here. Hi, it's a little after 3 o'clock. John Williams here on WGN Radio. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis in the studio. Hello, folks. How are you?
Hello.
So what's the big topic for you guys today?
Well, we'll take you to Washington, D.C., obviously, where all of the action happened this morning. Now, Congressman Steve Scalise is said to be in critical condition following surgery after being shot.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought he was going to – you never know how these things are going to go.
You don't. Right.
He was shot in the hip, and the first reports were that – he was stable, and you thought, okay, he's going to get out of this.
But he had made a phone call even and assured people, hey, I'm going to be okay. I'm in good spirits, that kind of thing.
So we'll see what happens there. There's more detail now. Some very dramatic video is coming out, and the audio associated with it is equally as dramatic of the shooting. Obviously, everybody's got a cell phone, right? And so
I was shocked that I hadn't seen it earlier. So there is video of the shooting.
Yeah. There's video of you know, people on the ground, taken from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You hear it very. You don't see as much as you hear.
No, it looks like he's behind a fence. One of the videos I saw,
and the shooter.
You can very much hear.
No, the camera the person with the
shooting this video that's been released, and you can very much hear the how close he is to the gunfire.
I guess that's valuable, but boy, if I'm ever in a situation like that, I am not thinking about YouTube.
Unless you already just happen to have your phone rolling for some reason to, you know,
I
want to
hope that's
the
case, you know, because that's just ridiculous.
Well, I think people do it too, thinking, well, maybe it could be of help here. And, you know, you do have a lot of the interesting part of D.C. I've found is that you do have a lot of people there. You know, the business, it's a one industry town. Essentially, right? Mm-hmm. And government and all forms of that, whether it's the security side or all those
lobbying firms.
Yeah, they you know, people all kind of have a sense of what that's like. There's a culture to that. And mm-hmm. And I think this is a little bit of what we want to talk about today, too, which is, you know, we've spent so much time in politics in America demonizing one side, demonizing the other, both sides demonizing lobbyists who work for one side or the other. And it's just business as usual there. And then they go out into the, you know, try to motivate voters using anger. And now here we have a circumstance where one guy went over the edge, drove all the way to D.C., right?
Yeah.
From downstate Illinois, near St. Louis, Belleville, Illinois. And
I used to live in Belleville.
And he spent 6 weeks there, apparently. He wasn't sure if he was going to stay there or not stay there, and used a military-style weapon, right? We're being told it's an M1, and with iron sights, which, thankfully. I mean, there were so many lucky things here that there was security detail
there. This could have been
there.
A lot worse, that's for sure.
For sure. So we'll talk
to the news, guys, and we'll be listening.